Right. Welcome, everybody. Very hot day here in the southwest. So I'm trying to be summery. Anyway, excited to meet with you this morning and talk more about self-doubt and developmental psychology. Let's chat more about what this looks like and we'll get into it. We're going to be a bit interactive today. So just so you know, today we're going to talk about this meta model of adulthood and like what it means to be a developmental coach, what developmental coaching is all about. And we can talk a bit more about how this might differ perhaps from other forms of coaching like solution focused or cognitive behavioral approaches to coaching. We're going to talk about expanding your self-concept, expanding the client's self-concept, and I've got a really sweet little exercise that can show you kind of the simple and complex ways that we can do this. And we'll also start to prepare you a little bit for practice pods, which begin in a couple of weeks. So we'll have a little chat about that. Okay. All right. So the thing to kind of get your head around is adulthood. It's not just now you can vote and then you accumulate stuff, or stuff being experiences as much as things. You might have a midlife crisis, apparently, according to the research. And then you prepare for sort of retirement and death. Tends to be the linear approach to adulthood. But what we know after a number of years of research into adult development is that actually we continue to grow and change throughout our adult years, that we don't have a fixed self, if you like, that there is scope for us to grow in many different ways, socially, emotionally, cognitively, spiritually, that actually over the course of our adulthood is often rich with development. And I imagine that, like me, you probably know people that you might have gone to school with who've kind of perhaps married someone else that was in your class and sort of stayed in a life that looks very, very familiar perhaps to one that you've moved on from or is different from you. So it's a choice in some ways to have a life that reflects something that looks like your parents or looks like something that doesn't develop and grow. And sometimes we're thrust into that, right? What can often happen is that we forget that our clients, all of us, create our own worlds, right, of what feels safe, what feels risky. And sometimes that at different times in our lives and our clients' lives, that can feel quite stable, and other times it can feel like it's in turmoil, and it will change over a lifetime. But it's interesting to see, and the research just does bear this out, the more we put ourselves in the path of change and growth, the more growth and change will happen. It becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. So there is an element of choice in that. One of the things I wanted to share with you is this, just to kind of bring this to life a little bit, is this diagram. And it can be a really helpful way to start to think about adulthood. Is that there is this kind of Mobius loop, right? Where at some points during our adulthood, we're in this place of kind of sameness where everything is sort of ticking along. We feel quite safe. We feel quite protected. We're maybe integrating stuff that has happened, but we're in a place of sort of acceptance. This is where we are safe, right? This is where things are ticking along. And this can be in specific areas of our lives, and it can be in our whole life. And at some point, something happens, partly because this can, for some of us, feel a bit stagnant after a while. And sometimes it can feel really safe, and so we crave it, and then life happens, right? And we'll be thrust into some kind of difference, some kind of shift where uncertainty gets involved. And that might be in our jobs and our relationships and friendships, you know, house changes, all kinds of things. And in that period of transition, we kind of have to expand to meet that challenge. There's usually more risk involved. Sometimes we resist it. That difference can feel, it can feel unsafe. It can feel like, oh, I'm not sure if I want this shift. Even if we do choose it, we can kind of have this sort of push me, pull you type relationship. So change is disruption. Any kind of change is disrupting. But what it does do is expand our feeling of safety. It expands on what we know, who we know ourselves to be. And importantly, in this period, that is when our clients are most likely to seek our coaching support, right? When they're in that place of, whoa, a change is happening. I've either chosen this or it's happening to me and I kind of don't know what's going on. How do I do this? How do I make sense of this shift? This is also when self-doubt is likely to be highest. And it's also when you may think back to times when you've had your own experiences of change and uncertainty. It's usually when you feel a bit unmoored, a bit like, I don't know what's going to happen here. Most of us go through this kind of Mobius loop a few times in our lifetimes. Some of us go through it on an annual basis. Right. For most of us, our experience of COVID was this. So we went through it on a kind of mass scale of, oh, suddenly there's all this uncertainty in our world. What we thought was safe isn't. What we thought was true actually is turning out to be kind of changeable. Don't quite know who I am in this, what to do in this. Might have been that work felt a bit more tentative or changeable. Relationships come under pressure because of this, of the shift and change. So adulthood is this experience. And for some people, this might only happen once. And it can feel like the biggest thing that's ever happened. And of course, it probably is. Right? What's useful as a coach is to understand that our capacity and our clients' capacity to understand, to be with, to make sense of and respond to these periods of change, of difference, that depends largely on our self-concept, on our capacity to be with complexity. So complexity is the kind of key to developing us as adults. And when we have this sort of view of adulthood where it's like, oh, okay, you're going through a change, then of course you've never done this before. It's going to feel uncertain and unclear. Then we can kind of help our clients to be with that in supportive ways. I I just want to kind of pause there for a second and see how that's landing for you all. Anyone wants to comment, please go ahead. Yeah, Irina, sorry, go for it.
No, I just really like this model. I didn't finish all the videos before because I was constantly stopping and writing down things, but I find it really interesting and makes all sense. It's really nice to see it so much well presented in words and in this model. But yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah. And you can kind of see, right, like if you think about your clients, if they're entering into that change, but they've never done anything like that before,
yeah,
it would feel like, holy crap, I don't know, I feel like I'm coming up to a cliff edge. I have no idea what's on the other side. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. Yeah. Kirsty, go for it.
I find it really interesting because I think of my sister who would be one of those people who, you know, stayed local. Entire goal from the age of 25 was to pay off her mortgage as soon as possible, has a holiday in the same hotel in Florida every year, and that's fine and she's happy doing that, but I'm the exact opposite. But I look at our capacity for dealing with, she's never had a period of transition or change, and then she 2 weeks ago walked out of her job where she'd been for 12 years because she's been bullied relentlessly for months, and she's absolutely fallen apart because she's never had anything challenging or any period of transition in her life before. And you said, I don't think she would even be open to coaching because I just don't think it would even enter her head that was something that existed. And I'm watching how she's coping with this at the moment and just thinking how differently I would cope with it because, you know, I change things all the time. So I can't stop thinking about her as you're going through this because it's like a very real current example for me. So it's really interesting.
Yeah, it's such a beautiful example of exactly how this works, right? It is the if you think about development, think about complexity. When you're kind of getting a sense for yourself of where your clients might be in terms of developmental stages, it is exactly what you're describing, Kirsty. Like, what is their tolerance for complexity? That's going to give you a kind of clue as to how best to support them. Yeah, beautiful example. Yeah, Scott.
excuse me. What I see. This makes a lot of sense for me and my clients because what I tend to find is that when people come to retirement, there's a sense of utopia, euphoria. And then when clients look at retiring and if their income, their retirement income is based on the performance and investment market, and with investment markets being as they are at the moment, it brings so much uncertainty and panic. And that makes a lot of sense to me as well. So yeah, that's really interesting, to be honest, Seth.
Yeah, cool.
How I deal with it at the moment, I'm not quite sure, but we'll get there.
Cool. Thanks for that, Scott. So yeah, Jane, go for it.
I was just going to say, I'm quite new to coaching individual clients, and I put a call out through my newsletter offering free sessions so I can get practice. And I asked everybody who replied to tell me, you know, why they wanted coaching at this particular time. And I really expected, given the sector I work in, for people to respond with issues around burnout. And I was really surprised that they came back and they said change. So
yes.
Even despite the context in my sector, which is really demanding, it was issues around transition and change that everybody wanted help with. So I think you're absolutely right. No surprise there.
Amazing.
You are absolutely right.
You're very kind.
But I have doubted you.
You're right. I'm going to record this little segment and give it to my husband. and I guess this is the thing to always feel reassured. Like when you are in your own self-doubt about, holy crap, where's my next client coming from? Because we're as business owners, we're constantly in that loop, constantly. When it comes to where are our clients coming from, how do we, you know, entrepreneurship, it's a full house of risk. Well done us. But always know every single adult is going to go through some kind of transition. And they may, like Kirsty's sister, be complete, like this may be their first go round or it may be their fifth. But there are always going to be people looking for support to navigate some kind of change or transition. This is a very natural place for folks to seek out coaching, right? Because they actually need to feel more resourced to cope with what's coming up. And it's when self-doubt is naturally and understandably likely to be highest, right? That sense of panic that Scott's talking about, that sense of, oh, I don't know how much of this is even in my control, all of that. So let's talk a little bit about I just want to give you like a couple of kind of top things to keep kind of constant for yourself as we look at developmental psychology. And this can be a bit of a, like, this took me a really long time to get, right? Because I personally, conductor here, I like to go, where's the top one and how do I get there fastest, right? Development is not like that. It's an onion, right? The closer you get to the heart of the onion is the closer you get to complexity. The closer you get to yourself being able to cope with pretty much anything life throws at you. So there isn't a goal with this, right? It's not a ladder that we're trying to climb. It is an onion. We're peeling back the ways that we defend and protect and try to manage risk and control it and all of that good shit. That is very human. And we're supporting our clients to feel resourced so that whatever life throws at them, they feel okay. They can feel some pride and a sense of self in what is going on. Yeah. So there is no best place to be. You kind of are where you are, right? So Kirsty's sister, I'm just going to use that as an example, Kirsty, because it's such a great way to conceive of this. Who, you know, anyone who has had a pretty consistent, predictable adulthood where they've created a life that they kind of know what's coming and they're in control of as many things as possible. You know, that is a life that can be full and rich and joyous, have a sense of real pride and full of connection, all of the things that make a human life really meaningful and fulfilling. That can happen at any stage. Equally, it doesn't matter how intelligent you are, right? Everyone can be at every stage. Yeah, so there's no like best place to be. And it can sometimes help to remember that we can't make development happen. So there's no place that we're trying to get our clients to either. Secondly, the reason this is helpful is that it is a way to understanding the meaning making of our clients, right? What does their world look and feel like to them? So this is going in my academic supervisor who wrote a book on developmental coaching. She used to say this is like empathy cubed, right? It's not just that we can empathize with where the person is. We're actually imagining what it's like to be in their shoes. How does this make sense to them? Why might they be responding in the way they are? If you've ever done any NLP training, it's kind of like taking positions, right? First position, second position. So that idea that we can, you know, sort of see things from our perspective and from the other person's perspective, looking back at us, not just what we would do in their shoes, but what they're doing and why, and really empathizing with the reasoning behind that. This can be so helpful when our clients are doing things that we think, what's going on here? Why are you doing this thing that you don't, you've said you don't want to be doing? Why are you responding in this way that seems illogical to all of us? Right? We can add some compassion in here. And we can kind of detach from it all. Yeah. So our kind of fundamental question when we are working with a client with this developmental frame is, what is their self-concept? How are they seeing themselves and making sense of themselves? And the thing is that, and I think one of the reasons why this is so helpful is that most of our sense of self is unconscious, right? Because it's the water we're swimming in. We don't often think about, who am I? Why am I responding in this way? Unless we're particularly reflective people. But often we can be reflecting after the fact, right? So we're not always conscious of what we're doing and why in the moment. And so when we have this kind of developmental approach, what we're doing is making some pretty informed assumptions about the unconscious experience of our clients. Right? And it's a tightrope, because we need to check those assumptions, and assumptions can tip into judgments pretty quickly, right? But we start to build a picture of who our clients are and why they are who they are. Right? We're really trying or attempting to make sense of the meaning making of our clients, right? What are they making things mean? Classic example of this is, someone gets feedback at work and then they come along to a coaching session. And the feedback we think is pretty neutral. It's something like, I'd really love to see you prepare for meetings so that when you're speaking, you've got everything ready to rock. Right, and that person is going, oh my God, that means I can't do this anymore. I'm hopeless at this. They make it mean something that you can't see, right? That you're not reading into that at all. But when we can kind of get into our clients' meaning making and see why that might be quite raw for them, they can feel more seen and more understood. And we can support them to feel more resourced in that scenario. So let's talk about the three sort of stages of development, the three main stages of development that we will come across with our clients. And this is the diagram that you may have come across in the workbook. So there are three main stages of adult development. A form, and this is taken from a number of different approaches and models. But I've created this for because I want to do it through the lens of self-doubt and self-belief. So we have a forming self-concept, a formed self-concept, and a reforming self-concept. And I just want you to think about the clients you've worked with recently, lately, the ones you hope to work with. See if you can get a sense of where your people might be. So when someone's self-concept is still forming, right, their sense of self is actually kind of determined or based on the expectations of others, right? Kind of, I am my relationship. My identity is pretty tied to relationships. I need other people to kind of give me a sense of who I am and where I belong. So folks who have a forming self-concept tend to kind of follow the rules and the scripts and the expectations of whatever social group or relationships matter to them. So the main kind of goal of someone with a forming self-concept, the way they feel safe, is through certainty. Right? I know who I am because everyone around me tells me I'm the same as them and I fit in and my belonging is preserved. This is a really important stage of our self-concept. Most of us get here post-adolescence, early adulthood, and in terms of like the development of adults generally, like in the last few generations, this has been a really important part of us evolving as a human race, right? We've formed these social groups, we've taken care of each other, and we've allowed, you know, the world to kind of catch up. So you think about things like civil rights, feminism, like the progression of humanity has come from people getting together in these relationships and seeing, there are people like me, we can actually create change from this, right? So it can be a really positive thing. It can also mean I'm going to hang out with the same people I went to high school with, and they're going to keep me in this stage because that's where we feel safe. Equally, it can be folks who get really evangelistic about the organization they work in. Like if you've ever met someone who's gone from being an intern to a kind of, you know, they get offered a full-time position and they're like, this is the best company ever, right? And they're pretty identified with the organization. Yeah. But it can be any kind of community where our sense of self comes from those relationships that we build there. Yeah. Anyone feel like, yep, I know people like this. I recognize this. Yeah. Kind of everyone's Kirsty, sorry.
I think, is it bad that I feel quite a lot of judgment about it? Like as I was listening to you, I was thinking, God, that's boring. And I probably shouldn't think that. Because it's my sister again. Bizarre today.
Yeah, well, notice your meaning making, right? And everyone who shares Kirsty's feelings here, right? Just notice what you make it mean that someone has a forming self-concept,
right?
Whether it's good, bad, indifferent, or how you kind of feel about it. It's like that's giving you a clue as to perhaps where your own stage might be. Right? Anyone else want to say anything about?
I just listening to you because the first time I read it and watched the videos, I was like, oh, I'm not sure if I'm getting this. Then I read the workbook, got it a bit more. Then as you're talking, I'm getting it more. And actually, just as you were just explaining that, I was like, oh, wow, actually, I was there for many years in that first section because my identity was fully wrapped up in my job title. Like, I was a training manager. That's where I was. And I think it's that sense of community. Everybody knew what I did. I liked the people that I worked with. It felt safe. I enjoyed it. And then I think that's where then when I then moved out and moved into coaching, it still doesn't feel comfortable for me to say, I'm Cassie and I'm a coach. So I think that idea is resonating in being wrapped up in an identity or a group or a community.
Yeah, perfect. Exactly that. Yeah, Anka.
Yeah, so what I think is so interesting is I find myself in all of those stages in different contexts and in different subjects. So in something where I feel kind of insecure, I have a need to find a place where I can be defined by the outside and belong because I'm just growing into that. And at my work as a nurse, for example, I'm very, very strange for the people if I'm not just a nurse. I do this work because I love it, but not because I'm just that. So I like it's my own need sometimes, and sometimes it's the need of the other people, so that I always kind of feel like I'm kind of like, you know, finding myself in all of those.
Yeah, beautiful. This is very true. We have no steady self, right? Our self is not fixed, and there's no kind of steady state of who we are. We contain multitudes. I once said on a podcast that we contain multiple dudes, and I have to completely come back to we do contain multitudes, right? We have different selves. For anyone who's done any kind of parts work, which we'll talk a little bit about, is that, you know, we have a part of us, a part of you, Anka, who's a nurse, who's like, yeah, that's a part of me. And for someone who is training as a nurse, that may be their whole identity, right? For someone who doesn't have other aspects of their lives and has been a nurse for as long as you, they may still be very identified with that role. Right, so it's not about length of time. It's not about where we get to. It's how do we make it? What do we make it mean that I'm this? I'm part of this group. Yeah, really cool. Okay, so the next one. Oh, and by the way, around about 60% of adults are here for their lifetime. 60%. So more than half of adults are very content and happy here, right? As little complexity as possible, thanks. I'm surrounded by an echo chamber that keeps me in a good kind of belonging state, certainly. For folks with a formed self-concept, right? It's the diagram's meant to kind of show you a little bit about this. I've got my own identity. I make my own choices. So usually what happens, because there's also the period between here and here, this doesn't happen overnight, right? We usually go around the Mobius loop a couple of times to get here. But what can happen is we either fall out of love with a community, we simply change jobs, and we're like, oh, I can belong to more than one group. Hey, well, who am I in all of this? You know, sometimes life changes will happen, right? Our kind of role or our primary identity might change. We go from being perhaps a wife or a partner to a divorcee or a widow, right? And then we have to kind of reimagine who we are in that, right? So the idea is that when we have a formed self-concept, the way to sort of conceive of that is this a person who sees the world as kind of, this is me and this is not me, right? They kind of know who they are. They have a capacity to sort of determine their own values, a sense of themselves that they're authoring, they're creating. And they're usually likely to have some personal goals, a capacity to sort of be self-reliant, move forward in their lives, that kind of thing. They're kind of willing to stick their head above the group or out the side of the group and do something a bit different. And of course, you know, this is a great place to be. You have an increased capacity for complexity when you have a formed self-concept, because you're then managing the beliefs and the values of the group that may differ from the beliefs and the values that you hold. And you can hold both of those things, maybe slightly awkwardly at first, maybe only in one context, right? But the idea is that you're growing a sense of yourself. And I don't want to sort of single you out or make this in any way wrong, Kissy, but that idea that, oh, this is better than that, right? Like I'm, you know, this would be boring to me. It's like, this is me, this is not me, right? So that gives you a sense of, oh, your sister's probably here and you're probably here for some of that relationship. And it can be tricky, right? Because how do we communicate when we make meaning in completely different ways, right? Something that I find quite fascinating, and a whole lot of research came out around this after 2016 when the politics of the states changed quite radically, is that a lot of conservative voters tend to like security, straightforward rules, simple answers to things. More left-leaning democratic folk tend to be able to hold more complexity. Well, it's not as simple as that. We kind of got to hold other people's viewpoints here, right? I think that's quite fascinating, right? It's like, oh, so we're talking past each other because we have a completely different way of seeing the world, right? When we get to this stage where we sort of feel like, you know, I kind of know who I am, I have my own identity, I make my own choices, you know, this isn't free of risk or free of, challenge either. There's a lot of self-denial that can go on here, right, around, well, this actually is me, but I don't want you to know that, so I'm going to say it's not me. I'm going to present to the world the authentic version of me that is acceptable, right? So there is a long trail that we lead back into our relationships. Often our self-concept is formed on the basis of our relationships. And, you know, I think politics can be a helpful way of making sense of this stuff, but if you think about the kind of crisis of self that a lot of white people have gone through in the last few years, I am not racist, I'm a good person, and recognizing that actually our world is racist. Of course we are racist, and we have unconscious bias and ways of making sense of the world that would be absolutely determined as racist, right? But it's like, but I'm not. So this is me, this is not me, becomes a way of trying to fit into the right group, right? So we scoop up some of this self-concept that comes from our relationships, and we always bring it with us, right? So these folks are still here, right? So even when we're in that place of, yeah, this is me, this is not me, we can still kind of, you know, kid ourselves a little bit about who we might be. We can all sort of have those ideas of who we want to be, but just aren't, right? The beauty of this is that, again, our self is not fixed. If we can bring that complexity in and see that, oh, look at me trying to be a morning person when I'm just not, right? But I feel like that should be a good thing. I feel like good people are morning people, but actually that's just not me. So I'll perform the morning person routine, but it's not really who I am, right? Anyone kind of feel like I'm there, that feels like me in most of the places in my life? Yeah. I've found most coaches tend to be in that place of this is me, this is not me, to have a formed self-concept. I think that's probably because usually we have had either a previous career and come into this work, and so we can kind of see that difference, right, of leaving a group and joining a new one and doing that from a place of values. And also we tend to be a bit more reflective than the average bear, right? So we kind of can hold ourselves to look at who we are and how we move through the world, what our meaning making might be. And of course, you know, we can keep on developing, keep on moving. So you may find that in some areas of your life, you can hold even more complexity. Right, where you actually, your self-concept keeps reforming, right, where you're quite open to change, to paradox. You can appreciate complexity. You don't need to have all your friends vote the same as you, believe the same things as you, value the same things as you. You actually seek out difference in some ways, or you know, have that high tolerance for ambiguity and contradiction and paradox among folks. There is often in that reforming self-concept stage a sense that your sense of self isn't really attached to a particular aspect of yourself or your history or your identity. You're kind of able to move in the flow of your life a bit easier. It's quite rare to get here, according to the research. That doesn't mean that we don't have glimpses of that, but it is quite rare to get here. Keegan, who came up with these, with some of the stages, the stage model, he believed sort of 20 years ago that less than 1% of adults got here. He also has said that our world is facing more and more complex, unknown, solution-based problems, and more of us are being required to get to this place. And so, you know, when I look around and see lots of diversity, lots of change, some of it quite challenging for some of us, that feels to me like, yeah, we're more of us en masse are getting to a state where we sort of hold ourselves a little more lightly. Yeah. So something to play with, we're going to come back to this during our time together. What I wanted to do is give you an example of how we can start to expand our sense of self, and just to play with this, okay? And this can be a fun thing to do, just to sort of get a sense of where you're at. So this is a very straightforward exercise. I want you to write down half a dozen qualities that are you, right? If you on your best day, who are you? Things you're super happy to claim as part of your self concept, right? So try not to overthink it. It's just write down half a dozen things that you're like, I am this. Yeah, five or six qualities that you are happy to claim. It's like, yeah, this is me. On my best day, I'm this. For some of you, this will be super simple. For others, you may overthink it. How would your best friend describe you? Okay, and then next to these qualities, I want you to write down the opposite quality. All right, so if you are generous, selfish. Yeah. So what's the opposite to this quality that you have? you've got a list of the qualities that you're happy to claim, things that your best friend might describe you as, and then the opposite of those qualities. Now what I want you to do is write down some a bullet point or a note, something that gives you evidence that you are the opposite of the quality you want to claim, right? So that the opposite quality, when have you lately exhibited that quality? Notice that you may want to resist it, right? If anyone's confused, let me know. Because sometimes what can happen is we go, oh, I think she means find evidence for the quality that I'm happy to claim. But that is an unconscious process of our brain resisting claiming the quality that's the opposite. And got the evidence of their opposite qualities. Yeah. So just allow yourself to notice that you are both, right? You're both lists. There are parts of you that are all of those things. You are the qualities you're happy to claim, and you've now got evidence that you're also the opposite of those qualities, right? Notice there's a tendency to want to judge one or the other, right? So I just want you to notice that, absorb that you are all of these qualities. This is you containing multitudes on paper right in front of you, right? This is you holding more complexity, right? We're not just the qualities we'd like ourselves to be, but we're all of the things that are opposite to that too, yeah? So we're just going to get into groups and have a chat about that process. What is that like to be with an expanded self. That is all of those things. How did it feel to write down your opposite qualities and then find evidence for them? What does that tell you about who you are? What your self-concept actually is? What do you make it mean that you've got this evidence here? Yeah. So we'll just take five minutes each. I'm just going to pause. Welcome back, everyone. Who wants to share how that was? What came up in your pair or in your three? What's it like to be with an expanded self? Yeah, Jane.
I don't mind sharing a bit of that the really, really great discussion in hour three that for me really helped to open up the exercise a lot. And the last thing that came up, so we were looking at the opposite qualities and recognizing that they are qualities that exist in us and maybe exist in shadow. And after talking and sharing various examples, I began to feel curious about them, as in not, ooh, I'm not lazy. I began to actually go, oh, I am lazy when it comes to exercise. And instead of thinking that's not me and beating myself up, I began to feel a bit curious about the fact that I can be very hardworking and lazy at the same time. And then I shared with the group another example. I think I said, you know, I can be committed, but also I can be flaky when it comes to things like a daily practice that's just for me. I can be really flaky. And my group participants just shared that my whole being changed. And I looked really excited and playful at the idea that I had permission to be both. So it was really interesting to get curious about those opposite qualities and to think, what would it be like if I could be both and?
Great. Love it. That's it, right? Like, we start to expand. This is such a beautiful example, Jane. Yeah, can be committed and flaky. Yeah. And I imagine as well, there are also selves that you possess that are somewhere in between those two polar extremes, right? So that's the other part of complexity, right? Is that we kind of go, yeah, there's the binaries, but there's also the bits in between, right? There's maybe a part of you that's a bit, meh, I could do it if I needed to, right? Like, that kind of energy where it's a little more neutral. Anyone else want to share what came up? That's such a great example, Jane.
No, we just discussed also a bit if it's always the case that there is like two binary sides exist in you. Can it be the case that, for example, in one, that it's not really the case?
If I'm hearing you right, mm-hmm. Arena, it's about, is there more than just the binaries?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what you're asking?
No, I was curious because we were writing the negative and the positive, right? It can be, for example, that I have one of the negative side, but for example, there is no positive side for that particular quality, or vice versa. I have some positive, but the negative I cannot really find in any aspect. The example, can it be the case? In general, or have you met those cases that it can, yeah.
So one thing I just want to kind of mm-hmm. observe, at no point did I say negative and positive.
Okay, sorry. Yeah.
And it's an important thing to recognize, right? Your own meaning making may have superimposed these qualities are positive, these ones are negative, right? Mm-hmm. So can you tell me what the positive quality is that you couldn't find the opposite for?
Well, for me, it was for shallow. I do know I'm curious, but for shallow part, I couldn't find the example. But could be the case that it's just a wrong wording that I've put for the opposite.
Right.
Because
so when, shallow, the quality of shallow.
Yeah, because when Hannah said that maybe if you put narrow-minded, then I could come with examples where I had to broaden the perspective. So maybe it depends on the wording also that you use for the opposite word.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess the don't worry about getting it perfect, right? So yeah, narrow-minded, you may want to look at a thesaurus and see what other definitions there may be. You may even want to look in your first language. There may be a definition that actually is more useful to you, right? Because meaning making is so tied to our own language, our own vocabulary, right? When I think about examples of my shallowness, right, it's things like, oh, I bloody love the Kardashians, right? I love it. And I can waste an hour on the Daily Mail sidebar. Absolutely. Bring it on, right? So you know, and I'm just like, well, yeah, this part of me that does that, that's cool. So you can decide that for yourself, what that means for you. There's really, an answer to your question, you can usually find an example.
Okay.
You might just need to go further back in time or think more broadly, right? So it's a kind of space-time thing, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. And, you know, bring in your any humour you can have around this. Humour is a fantastic partner to complexity, right? Because often we get quite rigidly attached to who we are and who we're not and hold on to that quite tightly. And the idea is that you loosen this up so that you can access that curiosity that Jane was talking about. Right. So this is all in service of expanding our sense of who we are and what's possible for us. Right. And it can be super helpful for clients who may be, well, this is me and I have to do this or something terrible will happen, that you start to potentially open up. Is there a part of you that's the opposite of that? When was the last time you accessed her? What does she, he, they want to offer you in this context? What would they decide was the best thing to do? Right. So you start to kind of bring that meaning into their current sense of, oh, I can't possibly do anything different. Right. I would say that mostly this kind of developmental frame is helpful for us as the practitioner. It helps us to see where is the client making meaning here and, you know, what is the best way to support them, right? What feels like a step too far, yeah. In the workbook, you'll find that there are some kind of, like, risks for the coach attached to each of the three main stages. And it's just helpful to have that in mind as we move through into the more practice modules, and we'll talk more about all of that. So this hopefully gives you a sense of the kind of, you know, approach we're taking to coaching, right? This isn't, here's where you are now, here's where you want to be, let's beat you up along the way until you get there, right? This is, who are you right now? End of story. Like, what is possible from here, from where you are right now, which we are holding as sovereign, as self-belief coaches, right? What is possible for you? How might you see this situation differently? That comes from your own internal resources that you already possess. Yeah, that's what we want to help our clients to feel. Next week, we're going to be talking about trauma and trauma-informed coaching. So it's sort of like adding in the last sort of the three kind of main pillars of our theoretical approach. And we'll also be starting practice pods. So there'll be a study group next Thursday, which is on the online calendar with Scott, to talk about how to set one up and, you know, what's the best way to approach this. So we'll be getting in touch with you in the next, within the next week, before next the next call to let you know who your pod mates are and how to get in touch and set your pod up. And then there'll be a study group next Thursday at 5 PM UK time to sort of answer any questions you have and give you some sort of what we've learned over the last few years of doing this. And then you can go ahead and set those up. So we have an integration week in between modules 3 and 4. So nice and spacious, no scream and rush. We'll get the info to you so you can play with it. Okay. How's this been? Yeah. All right. Good. Interesting. Cool. Okay. Perfect. All right, my loves. Take care of yourselves. Stay hydrated.
Can I ask a question? I'm sorry. Just
yeah, of course.
Because I'm still thinking, does this model and exercise help, for example, for people who are a bit on autistic, on the spectrum of autism, or just think differently? Can they also help to I don't know, redefine the way of seeing self or allowing to step out to different possibilities? I'm not sure if it's a very applicable question here and now. But I was a bit,
I guess I when I hear you ask that, I'm wondering if you're thinking about a specific client.
No, my stepdaughter, she's young, she's 9, but I was a bit thinking because she's very structured and very anxious. She's very, yeah, very attached to the structure and the consequence of actions and things.
Yeah.
And if you ask her or I would think about any example of non-structured way, I was thinking, okay, is it maybe I don't have a good, maybe I need to think a bit more on this topic, but I was thinking, can it be the case then with the, for example, people or children whose neuropath is a bit like this, does this model help? But maybe let me think about it. And then
maybe have a think about it
because one
thing I would say is, my intuition is telling me for a child who needs lots of structure,
mm-hmm,
that actually this isn't perhaps the right tool. So I would just maybe have a think about this, mm-hmm, for yourself.
Yeah.
Arena, remember, this is for adults, and this is for helping adults to expand their self-concept. And for us as coaches, it is the frame that we are using to approach our client work with.
Mm-hmm.
So not everything is relevant for every context, right? Jane?
I was just going to say, as the parent of an autistic teenager, I would be very careful about using this tool to expand self-concept, particularly through a neurotypical lens, because that's potentially trying to fit somebody into a mold,
yeah,
that is not going to be.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. That was my next question. Okay, if the client comes where he's not aware, for example, that that's the case really for him, because some people get diagnosed at 35, 36, and before that they really question what's happening with them. And then I would, for example, start coaching in this way. Will we discuss also a bit of ways to recognize, for example, different ways of thinking, so not to damage the person really, you know, with the wrong structures, not to put, as you say, into the box, you know? That's one of my fears, actually, not to damage.
We'll talk a little bit about that next week.
Okay, perfect. Yeah.
So bring questions next week. Yeah, okay. As we talk about this.
Okay, great. Thank you.
It is both related and slightly tangential to trauma, but yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Thanks.
Cool. Thanks, everyone. I'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you.